All right, welcome on to a Summer League hotel room edition of Hollinger and Duncan. I don't know how long we can go because John is going to need to get to the arena to watch Alperen Sengun about 4 hours early just to kind of prepare himself a little bit.
I gotta pick the exact correct seat and just really, really think about, you know, where are the best, you know, stalking angles. And yeah, there's a lot to process.
Bring a jacket, by the way. It was freezing in there yesterday. I know you just got here. It was like, it was beyond the level that it normally is. I was like,
awesome.
I've spent like literally two games shivering, and then I went outside and it was like basically, you know, going from like the cold bath into the sauna. Like, it was, but quickly here, since people are probably going to be watching Summer League and stuff now. When you were, because we haven't had a chance to talk about Summer League yet.
No.
On this podcast since it started. When you were working for the Grizzlies, like, tell us about just the process of like putting your Summer League team together. First of all, like, how do you find these guys who are just, you know, not even on a real contract? And like, what do you tell them to get them to play for you? Like the guys who are not, you know, the non-roster Summer League type of guys.
Yeah, it's a really interesting process. A lot of times, like our guys who were plugged into the G League, played a big role in that, because that's basically like, that's sort of the same pool of players. A lot of time, it's either guys who were in the G League last year or who were in the G League 3 years ago and are now in Europe. And there's, so whoever's like the GM or your G League team is basically going to have a lot of the relationships to help you build a Summer League roster. Usually a couple times there will be guys you put on the team as kind of a favor to an agent.
That happens? What? I thought it was about trying to win the most Summer League games that you possibly can. These roster spots are valuable.
Well, you basically have unlimited roster spots with your Summer League team too, especially like if you were in a situation like we were the last couple of years where you're playing the Utah Summer League and then the Vegas Summer League, or even in the beginning, we'd play Orlando and then Vegas. So that sets you up to potentially have a lot of Summer League players. And then usually there are a few guys you're genuinely interested in who are either G League or overseas. And there's a little more competition, I'll say, to try to get those guys. And then there's also a little bit of a frenzy after the draft ends, and like the days after the draft, you're talking to agents, and a lot of times you're getting incoming calls from agents like, hey, my guy didn't get drafted. Do you have a spot? They're asking you like, who else is on your Summer League team? Obvious example, that like the year we drafted Jaren Jackson, there weren't a lot of agents for fours who were calling us about our Summer League spots because they knew their guy would never get to play. So, they're looking for like situations just to get their guys, you know, exposure. So it's a little hectic, and, cause you're having to pull this all together very quickly, have like a 2 day camp basically for your Summer League team. And then everybody flies out to Vegas or Salt Lake or wherever you're playing.
Yeah. That's interesting. So the conversations are kind of like, you know, all right, what's, cause the agents basically are looking for an assurance that there's going to be some level of opportunity for their guys to showcase what they can do. That's the point of all this.
Yeah, exactly. Until you get to some guys, you know, your top 8 to 10 guys in the team will probably be built that way, from guys you have actual rights to, your younger players, and then guys you're genuinely interested in, and a couple guys who maybe slip through the crack in the draft, or if you just have a hole on your Summer League roster, like, oh, we have no fives here. And then, you know, you'll take a couple guys like that in. Then the back end is usually more like favors or like guys who, you know, who maybe whose prospects aren't as great.
Jaleel Cousins and the like.
Yeah, definitely more that type of thing. It's pretty interesting.
So let me ask you this question here. Well, actually, let me say this too. So let's get to evaluating Summer League. And, you know, there's sort of the two types of guys, right? There's the types of guys you're talking about who are just trying to glom on and get a chance to showcase and maybe prove that they belong. And then you've got the roster players as well. So for the roster players, as an executive, what were you evaluating those guys on? What was the point of Summer League for you with those guys? Was it like, we want want to develop these guys, let them explore the studio space, or is it more like, let's have them play in the role that they're going to be on and prove that they could be effective in that role?
That's what you'd like to see happen, but you can't replicate it. Like, yeah. You can't, I'll use a former player of ours, Wayne Seldon, as an example. Like, you want to see how would he play alongside Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, and then you get to Summer League, and he's by far the best player on the team, so he's not playing that role anymore, right? So, it everything changes because of that. So, it's one of the things that makes evaluating Summer League hard, especially because most of these guys are going to be role players in the league, but in a Summer League environment, they're not role players. They're guys who have the ball in their hands all the time.
Yeah, and I like, to me, being able to see, you know, like Patrick Williams yesterday was a great example, right? He goes 6-for-20, starts off pretty well, then he took a bunch of bad jumpers. I've more heard about this. I haven't had a chance to watch the film on that particular game yet, but you know, that's a chance to kind of, all right, let's see if there's something here, right? Like, are there flashes of him, we're going to give him the ball over and over again. Like, can he beat his guy? Can he create separation? You know, does it just devolve into a bunch of long twos, right? Like Jonathan Isaac had a couple of summer leagues here where, you know, he was sort of the main featured piece. And it was kind of clear, like, all right, this guy doesn't really have the ability to get by his man and like create a bunch of separation. And, you know, so you kind of think, because especially like these more like toolsy wing types, like we've seen those guys like your Butlers and Kawhis develop into being really good players, even like someone like Jeremy Grant, for example, you know, and maybe those guys get there, you know, tend to develop later at 24, 25 or whatever. But you want to see, all right, let's give them a shot. Let's see if they have a chance to flash what they could do. And if it just ends up in a bunch of contested long twos and that's it, then you're kind of like, all right, you know, maybe you are 3-and-D is more what your ceiling is here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a chance to see them in different environments. It's a chance to evaluate some of your, like some of your end of bench guys, especially like just don't have a lot of minutes under their belt. So you watching them play in 200 summer league minutes might be more than you saw them the whole 82 game NBA season. Especially in like non-garbage time conditions. So it is a helpful eval tool that way. You know, a lot of these guys too, I mean, you'll see at Summer League, there's a lot of scouts from European or GMs from European teams there, from, you know, even like China, Korea, whatever. A lot of these guys who you won't see again after this are playing for overseas contracts, basically, at Summer League.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you know, like the Maccabi Tel Aviv, their guys are always there, right? Like, all these teams have just trying to pick up one guy. Yeah.
The Korean League, actually, I don't think I don't know if they're doing it this year because everything's been all messed up, obviously, but the Korean League would hold their draft at Summer League.
Huh. That's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And then I guess, you know, you also kind of run up against the same thing of like, all right, what role is this guy playing when you're trying to bring in these end of the roster guys? Because again, like you're not looking for like being able to score 25 points a game in Summer League. Okay, maybe that indicates that you've got some athleticism, you got some skills, but it's rare that you're going to want to bring that guy in to be a big scorer on your team. Like you know, your Jonathan Gibsons, right? Like that,
yeah.
Those guys, okay, maybe you throw them in, like we can sort of give them this like DH role for a few minutes a game, throw them in the Gennaro Pargo role, see if he can get hot. But generally, like those aren't the best guys that you're looking for. So, you know, it's not necessarily, oh, this guy averaged 25 a game. He made all summer league. Like now he's going to be on our team. There's still guys who are maybe more likely to play a role coming
up. Yeah. The biggest error everyone makes with summer league is fawning over these like 6-foot-1 shoot first guards, because like summer league is set up for those guys to be awesome. Like there's not a lot of structure, right? And they're not playing against the type of guys who could really kind of neutralize them, and they will have the ball in their hands. So a lot of guys like that look awesome in summer, not to single out a guy, but I'll use Carson Edwards as an example, who looked like amazing 2 years ago and has not really shown himself to be playable at the NBA level.
Yeah. Although if he could just make shots, like I think he would be, like the ball just hasn't gotten in for him, which is, I was talking about him with someone yesterday, actually. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, if he made his shots, like I think he would be fine. He was shooting like 29%.
Yeah. That's true.
Josh Selby.
Josh Selby, Grizzlies legend, obviously, would be another example.
Were you there when he was there?
No, or
was
that no. Your time? I came in at the end. He was included as a contract in the Rudy Gay trade. Was he? Wait, was he in that trade or the other one?
The Spence.
No, he might have been. He might have been in the. Oh no, wait, because it was a three-way deal. Yeah. Oh, you're right. He might have been in the Spates deal, actually. Huh. It was one. It was one or the other. Anyway.
Yeah, my wife always wonders why I can, like, you know, never remember to, like, take the garbage cans out to the street on Thursday night, but I remember this bullshit.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat.
The $3 billion, like, luxury tax avoidance trade by the Grizz in 2013.
Yeah, remember that, but I will not remember to vacuum the stairs. Yeah.
So I'll be honest with you, actually, I probably enjoy watching most summer league games more than just your average regular season NBA game, just because I'm learning more and seeing guys for the first time. I mean, obviously, you know, if it's between the 8 minute or 2 minutes left in the first and 6 minutes left in the second, when there's just nobody out there, like, that's miserable. But just to, like, you know, see Cade Cunningham versus Jalen Green tonight, or Evan Mobley versus Jalen Green the other day, like, that's more exciting to me, just because I'm, you know, my prior is, like, so limited at that point, and, like, I want to see these guys out there in person after, like, I evaluated their draft tape and stuff. So, like, obviously it's higher level basketball during the regular season, but if you're just, like, trying to learn something about guys, like, I think it's fascinating.
I agree. I always kind of enjoyed watching the summer league games. It's you can get to a point where you've seen so many of them that you're just catatonic. But
yeah,
it is really neat, because it's like you said, you're seeing different guys and in different environments. So it feels almost like an overseas scouting trip, almost, except you're not going overseas. So it's kind of neat that way.
There is something special about your physical state of just what, like, staying out, drinking beers until 2 a.m. In my case, going to the Caesar's Buffet and Lotus of Siam and Mian, this awesome Asian noodle place, you know, shoveling food in my mouth every meal, shuttling back and forth between 45 degrees Fahrenheit in the gym and 110 outside, realizing that you've been sitting in the same seat for 6 straight hours. That's, like, totally cramped for my frame. And then, like, also, but you also get amazing sleep because, like, the blackout curtains in your hotel room. So there's just something special about my physical state after a few days in Las Vegas that it's just, you can't get it anywhere else.
I don't know if I'm with you on every element of that, but but it is, I mean, it is such a unique experience here between the heat, the casinos, kind of the schedule you adopt while you're here. It's definitely its own special time zone. Like,
yeah, exactly.
There's Pelton no question about that.
Yesterday. Pelton was saying that yesterday. He's like,
because you guys are on Pacific time too, and it's still just, like, different.
Yeah. I mean, because it's just, like, nothing, although actually this podcast started pretty early, but nothing really starts before 11 a.m. So it's basically like, just treat me like I'm in Hawaii, right? Like, and I'm just, and I'm not the earliest riser in the world anyway. But so last thing here before we talk about the off season, do you have, like, any just favorite summer leaguers who are just, you know, sort of like the quintessential summer league players that come to mind for you?
I mean, I guess when I was with, you know, obviously I would watch all of our own summer league games. So what, like, Wayne Selton had that one summer league where he was just awesome for us, right? So that's the one that always stands out for me.
I've got a few.
You mean quintessential summer league, like just like a random, who is that guy?
When we had
Keith Stefik on our summer league team, who had played in Luxembourg the year before, like, people were coming up to us like, who the hell is that guy? that's probably the one that was, like, the deepest cut.
That league produces some talent. Didn't Alfonso McKinney also play in the Luxembourgian league? I have no idea how you even talk about something from
Luxembourgeois? Is that how you say it? I don't know. We're just going to make something up. Did he come from there? Did he play in that league?
I think he had a cup of coffee there, if I remember. But so I mean, a few that come to mind for me, obviously, And at our wedding, we named all of the tables, you know, after like various characters. And so all the basketball people who were invited to my wedding got to sit at the Jack Cooley table.
Yes! At the wedding. Oh my God. You know, he was on our summer league team.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that you didn't say him.
Actually. Oh, no, he's the other. I mean, I'm kind of going to the way back machine because, yeah, he was our first summer league team. And Jack Cooley's an awesome guy, by the way.
He is.
And I'm very happy you named your table after him. I don't know if you remember, there was a summer league game where he was going up against Luke Herangode, who also went to Notre Dame and had like the same haircut as him and everything. So it was amazing. Jack actually destroyed him too.
The best part of that is Fred Katz's favorite anecdote from summer league is that the PA announcer called Jack Cooley Luke Herangode at one point. And I think that Luke Herangode like wasn't even playing in that game at the time. So I've got another one for you too. Well, you were saying that Jack destroyed Luke Herangode.
He did. It was a momentous occasion for Notre Dame fans.
We also had yesterday sitting next to us were this group of guys that I thought were like Orlando Magic fans, but it turned out that they were temporary Orlando Magic fans, if you know that type of Las Vegas fan.
Uh-huh. Were they Giannis Tima fans?
Harper said that if Giannis keeps playing this way, he could be all summer league first teamer, which
he also called him Giannis and Tima Kumpo.
Giannis Tima. I know he's another favorite of yours, right? You guys drafted him.
We drafted
him in the 50s one year, right?
We drafted him with the last pick in the draft, 60th pick.
Yeah.
My first year there, I did multiple trips to Latvia to check in on him. And we actually ended up trading his rights to get Matt Barnes for a year, who we probably wouldn't have made the playoffs without. So that pick paid off for us. But Giannis has turned to a quality overseas player. He was pretty good yesterday, right?
His haircut is, he's got like this like super blonde haircut, actually. But So anyway, these guys were had the Magic plus three minus three. And, and it goes into OT. And then, of course, they're up by four. Airballed three-pointer gets put in by Jonathan Kuminga with 0.2 seconds left to lose him their bet, which I thought was richly deserved because these assholes were like annoying the shit out of me, like sitting next to the media section, just screaming every single possession. So they got their just desserts.
Nice.
So the other one that came to mind for me is Jeff Ledbetter, who's like this like white shooter guy.
No, we had okay. So our G League guys, like we had a running thing about Jeff Ledbetter for years because the first time he played against our G League team in Des Moines, he checks into a game and we're like, who the hell is this guy? Like, you know, and he just starts wrecking us, right? like he was a pretty good G League player, you know. We're like, holy crap, okay.
I mean, I think he was maybe like 32 or something. Like he definitely, he was out there for some team, you know, it was the Spurs for a while, but now I don't know if he's playing this year, but he's now been replaced by this guy named Spencer Littleston, who looks exactly like him. Who's all, like same exact game as Jeff Ledbetter as well. I think he's on the Pistons, summer league team. So you'll get a look at him tonight in the Cade Jalen Bowl.
Exciting. All right.
So I'm about to go on a month long trip. And I was thinking, man, I'm really going to miss my regular Theragun, but oh, wait a minute. I have the Theragun Mini as well. That's my wife's that she's bringing. We're going to share it. She actually prefers the Mini to the regular Theragun. In fact, it's a little bit less expensive, but you can bring it with you anywhere. It's fantastic. And Theragun, if you don't know what it is, it's a handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension. I swear by it. It seems like whenever I have these adhesions, whether it's my calf, I had one in my shoulder that was really preventing me from like kind of letting loose on a shoulder press. And I worked on it, did a few treatments, and it was good as new. And now I can go hard on shoulder press again, use it on my glutes, my lower back when that gets sore. And it's not just me. Theragun is also trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid, plus elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, hundreds of thousands of customers, and of course, me. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to therabody.com/PER, John invented PER, right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's therabody.com/PER, therabody.com/PER. Don't go to a chain store for your auto parts. There's no reason to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership. Instead, go to Rock Auto and save time and money. For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 from a chain store, $216 from Rock Auto. And Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers now for over 20 years. Yes, the dot-com era is over 20 years old now. They've got everything you need, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car and truck right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. But alas, we must move on to weightier matters. And I guess where I wanted to start here, you know, obviously we had to take last week off due to personal reasons, but so we haven't had a chance to talk about any of this stuff yet. I've obviously been reading your stuff, but you and I are both pretty low on the DeRozan thing for the Bulls. We don't need it. It's all been rehashed probably at this point. But what are your thoughts on like how that came together? Like, do you think it was like always going to happen? Was this thing about DeMar is going to meet with the Clippers? Was that like kind of used as leverage to get the deal over the finish line? Because like one of my theories was maybe this was like largely agreed to at the start and the Bulls kind of just misread where the market was going as opposed. And so that maybe this focus on like, well, hey, no one else could have given him anything. You know, I mean, it's not misplaced, I guess, because it was still an insane contract to agree to even at the start of free agency, but that they kind of just had to like follow through on what they said they were going to do.
Yeah, the only thing is, I mean, the one sign and trade got out there right away, and then their other one waited, well, at least a little while, I guess. I'm trying to remember. It was all such a blur. That was probably done within 48 hours, too, actually, right?
Yeah, so, I think it was like late Tuesday, I want to say, that came out.
So, yeah, there's a good chance they just held their fire until then, in that case. You know what else was weird about that deal? They could have done a sign and trade for Markkanen, and they paid Doug McDermott instead. And you look at the money McDermott got, like they basically chose Doug McDermott over Lauri Markkanen, which is, I mean, that probably says more about where Lauri Markkanen's at, actually, than it says about the Spurs in some ways, right?
Yeah, and Markkanen, I mean, he seems like he might have, like, Dennis Schroeder disease at this point, where he wants to get a lot of money, he wants to, like, start somewhere, and he wants the ball, and you're not going to find that with his resume right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Schroeder's definitely getting the Bonzi Wells Award for this year, for turning down a gold mine of a contract and having to settle for much less.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that what he got offered, I mean, there are reports out there that the Lakers did offer him the full 4 for $84. I also heard that maybe it wasn't quite that much, but still, it's better than the taxpayer mid-level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's probably what he's looking at this point. There's just not a lot of money out there. There's not a lot of players or roster spots even out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is that not only is he not getting paid, but he's not, I don't know that he has a guaranteed role anywhere where he can work back to getting, you know, starter level of money.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a challenge for him, even on a 1-year deal, to get a situation that could help him get paid next year. I mean, Boston, it does seem, is probably his best opportunity, because, like, okay, it's Marcus Smart, who's kind of a two, and they probably would prefer to play him at two at times. And then, you know, it's like Peyton Pritchard or whatever. Like, you can see him moving to the front of that line a little more easily, maybe, there. And he'll get to play in playoff games and stuff. So, but yeah, he's in a really difficult spot in terms of getting paid.
Anything else that really like kind of stood out for you, like contracts you really like? Well, actually, here, let's finish up since you brought up McDermott. Like, what did Doug McDermott do to double his salary over the last 3 years?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Like, I think he has some value as like a 3-4, but I see him more as a 6-man type, and he's at an age where he's not going to be any better than what he's been. He's a guy too in San Antonio. I worry he's going to end up taking a ton of twos, because that was kind of the thing he was doing earlier in his career. So I wonder if he's going to revert back to that there a little bit, just because of how the Spurs tend to play. So yeah, I didn't really love that deal. I mean, Shooter's definitely got paid this year. I mean, the Gary Trent deal was another one that was like, okay, really? I mean, you're going 3 for $50. It was slightly less than originally reported, but still, you're going guaranteed money. You're going 3 for $52 with a third-year player option. Like, where's the upside in that deal, right? Like, unless he becomes an all-star by the second season of that contract, you're at best going to break even.
Yeah, I think other than centers, you know, there is this feeling that shooting guard is like this position where there isn't a lot of depth. And that might be true. But I also think that, like, you know, paying $18 million a year is kind of just what starting shooting guards get paid, right? Like, that's Powell, Tim Hardaway Jr., Trent. I mean, Trent at least is younger. So, yeah. I he could maybe, like, create some long twos for you. He's never going to get to the basket. And, you know, I think he could be better defensively than your, say, Tim Hardaway Jr. type of guy, or maybe even like a Fournier. So, I mean, I guess I was just like, hey, you're a starting shooting guard. This is how much you get paid. But I mean, to also get the player option at that point, that was a little, and maybe the thought was they didn't want to go 4 years for him. And so the compromise was, okay, if you're only going to go three, then give me the player option. Maybe that's it. But yeah, I mean, great job by Clutch Sports, though, to not sign an extension with Portland and play the market. He got more years and a player, or more money and a player option over 3 years than they could have offered him over four.
Yeah. And he'll be an unrestricted free agent at like age 24 with what looks to be a much higher cap too.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see where that goes. I mean, presumably they'll get back on track eventually. So, by the way, quick aside here, but good job by the NBA and the Players Association coming to an agreement about the pandemic losses that really didn't disrupt the system of the NBA at all, right? Like the cap not going down. You didn't see like this thing like in Barcelona with Messi where they, I mean, who knows if this is true, but they say they can't offer him as much money as they wanted to keep him and stuff. Like everything's like pretty much been normal as far as how the league has operated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, that's almost been overlooked because it's been such a non-event. But yeah, they did a fantastic job with this. And it really stands in contrast to like the when they didn't do smoothing earlier and basically created the conditions for a lot of mayhem in the market 5 years ago.
But yeah, so McDermott, you know, Bertans was kind of him the year before, where you just kind of wonder, like, is it worth, and I think Bertans, by the way, is a much more dangerous guy than McDermott at his best as a shooter. He's got more size as well and more of a movement shooter, quicker release as well to me. But you know, when you're just, they're not good enough defensively to start, and it's kind of like, you know, maybe they'll close games sometimes, the right matchup, maybe they won't. You basically can't do any switching with those guys out there. Yeah. You just wonder about, like, are you going to pay eight figures for a guy like that, at least to me, even if shooting is at a premium?
Exactly, because you feel like you could get, like, if Furkan Korkmaz got $5 million, like, how much of an upgrade are you getting for triple the money here?
Yeah, so isn't McDermott like 29 already too?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, you're not capturing any upside here. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is what
these
he
shooters
is.
Seem to age a little bit. You know, they kind of, especially like kind of these slower shooters. You know, JJ Redick was like this too, where they kind of seem to age a little bit better. Like it takes them maybe longer to come into their own, but then they hold on to their value maybe a little bit longer as time goes on. But so here's one that really surprised me. I was shocked that Cameron Payne got as little as he did.
I was a little shocked by that too, because I thought he'd be playoff guy. So I thought he would get overpaid based on that performance, and really ended up with a pretty reasonable deal, like six and a half a year. They're only a partial on the third year. That surprised me. I thought his number was going to get a little higher than that.
I thought he deserved more than that, honestly. I mean, you called him playoff guy, but I thought he was good this regular season. Like he was a very solid third guard for them. Like I thought he even, you know, the way he's been improving, like he might even be like a low end start. Like if you compare him to Tyus Jones, Delon Wright, Monte Morris, like I think he's better than those guys, and they're all getting like $8-9 million, and they got it over 3-4 years.
Yeah, that's
all guaranteed.
That is a great point. Okay, by the way, how the hell do you trade Delon Wright for Tristan Thompson and not get a draft pick?
Yeah, well, I mean, and then also they signed like a billion other centers too, and they brought back Holmes. I mean, maybe they just felt like they were going to lose Holmes. Maybe that's what it was, insurance for that, but they didn't.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I feel like you can always come up with a center. But I mean, it's the same thing I thought a year ago. And I think history will judge me well on that these teams were using their full mid-level for centers they didn't really need. And most of those guys ended up not really playing that much, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, and or getting dumped immediately afterwards, Favors and Thompson, as you pointed out, for the Athletic. So during the playoffs, I'd be done recording at like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't go to sleep right away. need to have a little bit of time to myself, but I wasn't going to just watch some reality TV crap. I was going to actually relax, but also learn something with cinema quality video lessons for Masterclass. They've got masters in basically any field that you can imagine at this point, whether it's Gordon Ramsay for cooking, really been enjoying his classes lately, Steph Curry on shooting and ball handling, Serena Williams on tennis, Margaret Atwood for writing. They're now up to over 100 classes. You don't have to sit down and consume a full class start to finish. They're 10 minutes or so each. But if you really want to get into it, they all have downloadable materials as well, exercise that you can do. So I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass. And as a Hollinger & Duncan listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/PR. That's masterclass.com/PR for 15% off masterclass. Don't forget that /PR, John and Bennett, to let them know that you came from us. Yeah, what else? What are some other ones that surprised you either positively or negatively from the team side?
You know, I was really surprised the contract Fournier got. I got to be honest. I thought the market was going to cool on him after they saw what he looked like in Boston with like in the construct of like a more potent offense. And I mean, to pay him $20 million guaranteed in 2023-24, like I have a hard time seeing how you come out ahead on that.
Well, he's still relatively young, right? Isn't he only like 28?
Yeah.
I like his contract better than Hardaway Jr., although Hardaway Jr., we found out, declines, which I think,
yeah,
especially when you can do 8% declines with bird rights, that's better to me. But
yeah, that a little tricky spot, this what I call the bird rights trap with Hardaway, where if the guy leaves, you can't really replace him because you're over the cap, or in Dallas's case, at least you were operating as an over the cap team. So that made it a little trickier. Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably going to lose on that contract, but as you say, it's declining money at least, and you kind of know what he is. Like, I don't think you're gonna end up with a dog there either, right? You're gonna end up getting $10 million in value and paying the guy $16 million, but you're not gonna end up like it's not dead money either, I guess, is what I'm looking at. Whereas like some of these centers last year were just like, okay, like what are we even doing here?
Our guy Jared Allen was another one that actually might be my worst one of the offseason.
Really?
I'm more of a Fournier guy than you. Okay. Well, no, I mean, DeMar is the worst one.
DeMar is in a league of his own, right? Like that's like the LOL contract of this summer.
How good do you, before we get to Allen, how good do you think that Bulls team is, right? Because this is the thing that I've been hearing out of Chicago. It's like, all right, you know, yeah, we don't have the upside, but you know, we're going to be like the fifth or the sixth seed. And then, you know, we can keep building from there and blah, blah, blah. Like that's where I think they're kind of going wrong, is that I just don't think this makes them that good right now.
I think they're going to be better on offense and worse on defense than we were last season, which is a transition we already saw was happening. And then it gets really interesting once you start getting into the out years. Like this is a team that has never paid tax and is going to have four players in 22-23 making over $20 million. Zach LaVine potentially making like $35 million. So how are you going to put together the rest of the roster?
If LaVine is even there.
Yeah. Where are you going to get? Well, if LaVine's not there, then you're just not good enough. So that's a completely separate problem. But yeah, I just, to me, it's like, you know, it's like Grunfeld era wizard strategy. Like let's all in, you know, all in for the eight seed, you know, let's trade our pick for Randy Foy and Mike Miller and make a run for it. So definitely that kind of vibe. Like the DeRozan, like my God, like to throw in picks for the right to overpay him, and like you gave up actually one genuinely good player. You basically give up two because it takes you out of re-signing Markkanen, and you're, you know, instant negative value, negative equity on the contract. About the only positive out of it was you dumped Aminu's $10 million, but now you turned it into a bigger liability.
Yeah, well, that was part of the original sin of the Vooch trade, was having to take back Aminu to help out the Magic just so they could save some money over the next couple of years when they're rebuilding anyway. But yeah, yet the Bulls had to take back the bad contract, and then I mean probably the reason that they had to give up the first, well, number one, the reason they had to give up the first is because they had to pay DeMar. Like if they could have just paid DeMar a reasonable salary, then they could have just given up Young And then maybe they don't have to include Aminu. And then you don't have to include the first to get him to take Aminu.
Yeah. I mean, even if they had given Damar 18 a year, like, they might have been able to do this with room.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some other, there would have been some other things that they couldn't have done. They wouldn't be able to get Caruso on the mid-level.
Yeah, yeah,
That's the other thing they were able to do. But back to this team, like, I mean, I would be shocked if they get out of the bottom 10 in defense. Like, I just don't know how they do that. Like, Ball and Williams, and like, where's the evidence that Patrick Williams is even a good defender at this point, right? Like, he has the tools, but, you know, asking him and Lonzo Ball to make up for LaVine, DeRozan, and Vooch in the starting lineup, I mean, that's, and then they also don't really have any, like, good defensive bench options.
Caruso.
But, like, in the front court, which is where it really matters, you don't. You know, I guess they don't really have, like, any kind of a backup four right now. Maybe we'll see what happens with Markkanen. But so if you're going to be a bottom 10 defense, like, you know, isn't 500 kind of your ceiling? Like, is this going to be a top, like, you, unless you're a top five offense in the NBA, if you're a bottom 10 defense, you're a 500 team.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, to your point, I mean, Tony Bradley is the backup five right now.
And
that's a wrap for the front court. Like, that's it. That's all they got. So, you know, very, very interesting to see what happens there. Like, you know, were they too dismissive of, like, Daniel Tice? They just kind of sent him off to Houston for a small trade exception.
Yeah. I mean, Tice maybe just didn't want to be there. You know, that could be part of, I mean, I don't think, you know, 4 years, $36 million with a player option. I don't know if they wanted to go there on Daniel Tice at age 29. Although he is an underrated player to me, that's a lot of money for Daniel Tice.
Yeah, I'm more neutral on that. I thought that one was a little odd just because the team he signed with, right? Especially now that we're hearing that they will be able to get Usman Garuba out of Spain, which seemed touch and go there for a bit. Because now you're looking at, you have Schengen and Garuba and Christian Wood. Like, you have three young bigs that you're committed to, basically. And you have Daniel Tice in that mix too now. And this is a team that was kind of liked to play small in the past. So it's definitely a different look there, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a thought that they just need some more good players. They need to make some of these young guys earn it, which they didn't have to last year. Or that they could just move on from Tice. Although Tice, it doesn't seem like his value was that. I mean, Daniel Tice, like, this is always an interesting thing, right? And I think some of these guys who, what they get traded for can be instructive. Other times, not. Like, you know, Fournier got traded into a trade exception for a couple of seconds, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of made you think maybe his market wasn't going to be that good if that's all that was out there for him in terms of a deal. But then, you know, it took one team, the Knicks, right? And Tice, he got dumped for basically nothing by the Celtics.
Yeah.
And then he played better with the Bulls, I guess. But you see Schroeder. All right, you know, maybe you're not an $84 million player if all it took to get you was the 29th pick in the draft. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline. Get the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and your UFC MMA action. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON to get your 50% welcome bonus. Wouldn't it be great if there were a pocket-sized guy that could help you sleep, focus, act, or just be better? There is, and if you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. It's your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations and an easy-to-use app. Whatever the situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. They've got a 3-minute SOS meditation if you're feeling overwhelmed. You need some help falling asleep. They've got wind-down sessions. For parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. They have 600,000 five-star reviews, over 60 million downloads, 25 published studies on its benefits. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/lockedonmba. That's headspace.com/lockedonmba for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/lockedonmba today.
I mean, how about that trade, huh? Giving up Danny Green and a first to turn it into Schroeder. What do you think of what the Lakers did, by the way?
Have we not talked since the Westbrook thing?
Not sure we did. I love what the Wizards have done. I mean, they basically got turned Russell Westbrook into five players and kind of really turned their ship in such a way that they have the flexibility to do other things now. And, you know, who knows what it'll portend for Beal, but they basically have effectively dumped John Wall, which is unbelievable, right?
Unbelievable. It really is. Yeah, I mean, basically the draft equity is probably about the same. Maybe the pick they gave up is a little bit worse than the one that they got from the Lakers. But, you know, there's pretty heavy protections on the pick going out to, like, you know, ad infinitum. Yeah, I mean, now there's not that many teams, I think, that had, like, great off seasons. There just wasn't that much to do in the end, it seemed like. But, no, I like what the Wizards did for sure. I can't believe we're saying that. I think also another thing is that a lot of people probably didn't realize just, like, how fucked they were by the tax this year if they had kept Westbrook.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't do anything. Like, yeah. They couldn't afford to bring back, like, Robin Lopez and Ish Smith if they had wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, now are they – it feels weird about, oh, they had this great offseason. Do you favor them to make the playoffs? You know, probably not. You know, we'll see how well Dinwiddie plays and
how looks after how that. Often he plays.
Right. Yeah.
Although friend of the show, Hal Netto, has also re-signed in Washington. So
yeah, that's some needed insurance perhaps there. But yeah, so I mean, talking about Washington, but I think they were actually poised to take like a major step back.
I agree.
And actually the Knicks, who also, I kind of liked their offseason once it came out that they had a bunch of non-guarantees on the end or team options on the end of some of these deals, other than Fournier, that they only go out 2 years. So that I feel much better about their offseason. But again, they're sort of in the situation where I think if they'd stood pat, they would have taken a major step back. Whereas now I think they'll at least be kind of in the mix to be, a, you know, maybe an upside of getting to where they were last year in the conference, but probably more kind of 6th seed, 7th seed, 8th seed.
Yeah.
But even that, I think they might have taken a step back below there potentially.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think they were a little too enthusiastic about re-signing their own guys when there weren't really cap reasons to necessarily do that other than Derrick Rose. And so I thought they were too wedded to just getting the band back together rather than really thinking about maybe, you know, is there a real difference between having Nerlens Noel on this deal versus having another center on a 1 year deal and giving us more flexibility? The real bet here that I see with the Knicks is that the bubble won't burst with Damian Lillard until after the season. That to me is the bet you're making with these contracts, because they're set up to go into 22 with a ton of expirings. And so if you're saying that Lillard's situation will go past the trade deadline, then I think the Knicks feel like they're probably in great shape. But up until that point where you're dealing with like 2 year deals and you took away all your ability to do expirings and whatnot, that's a lot harder. And, you know, I mean, and I say that because one of the things you hear is that if Lillard decides to go down this pathway, that he's got eyes for New York. So I think that has to be something you at least think about if you're the Knicks, is keeping that ability to do that open. So
it seems like it's going to be New York versus Philly, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Philly definitely would be the team that wants him and is hoping to turn Ben Simmons into him, right? Like, I think Philly is just dragging its feet on a Simmons deal, basically, because they don't need to do anything right now or don't feel urgency to do anything because they're waiting to see what happens with Lillard and Beal. And then instead, they'll make the deal when we're all trying to have our freaking vacation in this accordion compressed offseason. So not that I'm bitter about that or anything, but
yeah, the Kyrie trade was the one that was in 2017. That was the one. I remember Danny was like on a train in Iowa when that happened.
I don't know if you remember Brian Windhorst like tweeting that it was like now morning in Italy and he'd spent all night covering the trade and his wife was researching divorce lawyers. Anyway,
yeah,
a humorous moment if you're on the media side, but yeah, so hopefully that doesn't happen for our sake, but I think that probably will.
Yeah, well, I mean, given some of the offers that are out there being reported of what Daryl is looking for, it doesn't seem imminent.
No. Way. And, you know, and I wrote about this for The Athletic this last week is, I mean, that's kind of always how he's operated, and Hinkie too, like going back to Houston, is that like they kind of start at pie in the sky and then work their way back to reasonable. And so I'm sure, I mean, given that they're not in any big rush anyway, like, why wouldn't you do that and see if you can, you know, catch somebody on the hook?
I mean, do you think, though, that like it has to get resolved before the start of the season?
That was my emotional response to watching the playoffs. I'm not sure how the Sixers feel about that internally, but I gotta think, it's just going to hang over your whole season until you deal with it. That's the thing.
Yeah, these reports that he's like still not in touch with the organization and who knows what the hell he's working on. He didn't go play for Australia. That's not encouraging.
Certainly not. No.
But yeah, I'm interested because, yeah, I mean, it just seems like Daryl, because the Beal and Lillard situations haven't resolved yet, that, you know, he could maybe make the Sixers better this year, but he's all about getting the stars. He's not about CJ McCollum's. He's about Damian Lillard's. And
yeah,
maybe his judgment is, all right, if I got a 25% chance of getting Lillard versus 100% chance of McCollum, I'm going to take that 25% chance at Lillard and just hope that Simmons' trade value doesn't tank even further.
Yeah. And I mean, that, you know, the fact that they don't have any games in the next 3 months is probably, you know, you feel pretty good about his trade value not changing. So, and I do think there are teams that are interested in Simmons too. I mean, I think there's enough smoke to the idea that there are some teams who have put feelers out, and I'm sure their idea of a fair price is very different than what the Sixers have asked for thus far. But I feel like if you're Philadelphia, you kind of know you have some backup plans if plan A doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, personally, as of right now, I see Ben Simmons as a bad contract. I've always been lower on him than everybody, but that's kind of how I see it right now. But obviously, they are, the point was made, I think, by Kevin Pelton that, you know, guys this young with all-star appearances don't become available. Kyrie Irving is really the last guy, and even he only had 2 years left on his deal at that point. So, like, this is kind of an unprecedented situation, but I don't see Ben Simmons as an all-star caliber player. Like, I know what the voter said, but that's there's a difference between that and what we saw in the playoffs last year.
The fit issue is just so hard with him, and you need the exact correct roster construction around him. I think that's what makes it really challenging, where, you know, there's some other guys who, like, maybe in terms of statistical production, their value isn't that different, but just you can put them on any team and it will still fit. And you don't feel that way with Simmons. Like, it has to be just the right combination of other talents around him.
Well, and it's one thing if you're Zion or Giannis, where you feel like, all right, if we put the spacing around this guy and give him the ball, he's going to be unstoppable. He's going to draw double teams. He's going to be relentless attacking the rim. And, you know, there's three teams in the league that have someone who can deal with this guy one-on-one, and that can be the foundation of our offense. And Ben Simmons, despite the fact that he's, you know, has maybe close to similar physical gifts as those guys, he's just not that guy. He doesn't attack the basket like that. He's scared to get fouled. He's not that level of finisher. And so then you're like, all right, yeah, we can maximize Ben Simmons, but what does maximizing Ben Simmons get us? You know, he's not going to drop 25 a game if we find a center who can shoot and put all this spacing around him and give him the ball every possession.
Yeah, he has to be like, you have to use him as a screener almost. I mean, that's the way you weaponize him. But then you need your center and power forward to be able to shoot, unless you're calling him your power forward, I guess. So it's just a very odd mix of skills that you have to put around him. And you need somebody else who can handle the ball around him too. You need a half court creator around him. So you need a lot of pieces to work. And if you have those pieces already, your team is probably pretty damn good and doesn't really need Ben Simmons.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, maybe a team like the Warriors would work for him. And, like, you know, he and Draymond together wouldn't be amazing offensively, but there's just so much passing. And then all the other guys can shoot so much. And the defense. Really good,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but, like, you know, there's not a lot of Steph and Clay's out there. And who knows if Clay is even going to be healthy. Any other, like, teams that really stood out to you? Let's start with just that you liked. Anybody that you thought just did a good job? It doesn't even have to be, like, the highest level of stuff, but
I think the Clippers got to be pretty happy with their offseason. I mean, getting Batum and Reggie back, I didn't think anyone thought that would happen. Batum took what I perceive to be a massive discount to come back. Interesting dice roll on Justice Winslow. I like Jason Preston. I think he might be able to play for them. So I'm interested to see what happens there. I thought it was another like good offseason of work for the Clippers. They probably need to dump one contract here, either Ibaka or Kennard, I'm guessing, or maybe Rondo to lower this bill and still, I mean, they're over $30 million into the tax right now. So that's,
I mean, does Ballmer care? Maybe he just doesn't care.
I think he cares enough that the marginal $30 million for a guy who won't play at all probably matters to him. So I think that's the point where he does actually care a little bit.
Oh, can I run a little? I don't know if this qualifies as a conspiracy theory past you, but you know, Kawhi Leonard still has not actually signed a contract.
Yes.
What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, I'm not sure anyone totally knows with him. Like, he's just like such a shadowy guy. It seems to me the 1+1 is his best option. I wonder if he's just seeing how the knee feels and deciding whether he'd rather do a 1+1 or just take the years right now. That would be the one thing I would think might be happening. At this point, like, he has to go back to the Clippers. Like, nobody else even has money left, right? Right.
Well, so this is my theory.
Okay.
And you know, this would be a little ballsy, but I also think that, you know, the Clippers would have a point here, at least. Not that that always matters, but because there are reports that he wanted to meet with other teams, right? Mm-hmm. And the other teams were like, no, we're not going to put all this shit on hold for you. Like, this is crap. Like, you're just going to use us for leverage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also we found out that he's, you know, it seems the reporting is seeming to indicate that he is going to miss all of next year. That seems to be the operating assumption. Like, there's some types of partially torn ACL, like Dinwiddie had, where you come back earlier. Doesn't sound like that's the type that Kawhi had. So we'll assume he's not going to play at all next year. So he's opted out. I think he probably wanted to get a 1+1, and perhaps he was going to use these other meetings with teams as leverage to get that. Mm-hmm. However, he no longer has those meetings. He has to go back to the Clippers. He is now committed to come back to the Clippers, but they haven't signed a contract yet. He was, you know, palling around with everyone at Summer League yesterday.
Yeah.
So maybe he wants the 1+1, and they're like, no, we're not going to just pay you to rehab for an entire year and we could potentially lose you. Like, we want you to commit to at least another year. If we're going to just pay you to not play at all for a year, you got to give us at least 1 year of commitment where you're actually going to play.
And do a 2+1, basically. Yeah. Or go whole hog and sign up for the 5 years right now.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that he could do, the 2+1 probably, even the 3+1 wouldn't, you know, he could do the same thing that Paul George did, which is, I think, gonna, like, it seemed kind of weird to Paul George at the time. It was like, oh, why would you do 3+1? You could sign for 5 years or do the 1+1. But I think Aaron Mintz was kind of ahead of the curve on that, knowing that you can extend after 2 years. And so you can kind of basically get, you know, 4 years on top of the initial 3 years on the 3+1. So you almost are basically signing a 7-year contract at the 10-year max if you sign a 3+1, because, all right, you rehab this year, you come back after the next year, you play well enough, you're 32, you have the leverage at that point to get another 4 years tacked on and pay you until you're 37. Because basically all you got to do, if you sign a contract at 30, sign the 3+1. All you got to make sure is that you're still good after year two. And now they have to give you another 4 years, like just like the Heat just had to do with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is that. Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that was on my list to talk about. Like, how much did the Heat screw themselves in the out years with that extension? Because they didn't necessarily have to do it. And we see.
I think they did because of the Lowry situation and getting Lowry to come and Butler and Lowry's relationship. That would be my guess as to why that had to get done so quickly.
Yeah. But I mean, you're really going all in on old now when you have, you know, in 23-24, you have $75 million committed to Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry. And you're over the cap with four players that year.
Pat Riley is 75 years old, by the way. That's
that seems to be a relevant piece of that.
Although I will say, thing. I said that he was 71 years old in 2017 when he signed all those contracts, and then they made the finals 3 years later. So that joke maybe was undeserved, and maybe it will be this time too.
How much better do you think they made themselves this year?
They're in the mix. It just, it all goes back to what you think, you know, who's the real Miami? Is it 2020 or 2021? Is the real Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo 2020 or 2021 in the playoffs against the Bucks?
Yeah, I mean, Lowry's going to fit them really well. I mean, the issue obviously is just at his age, like when does, you know, what's the drop off going to look like and how is that going to go?
No, I mean, as I've been saying for a long time, like everybody in the league right now, other than maybe 3-4 teams, is just myopically focused on the here and now.
Yeah, it's really crazy, right?
It's becoming like football almost at this point, but also without really a super team other than the Nets, like there's a little bit more kind of football-like parity, and I'm sure the Hawks and the Suns stories are making people think like, oh yeah, well that could be us as well. You know, we could be the 99 Rams, but for basketball. Yeah. But I still think last year is a little bit of an aberration. I wouldn't want to make, you know, believe that this is the new normal quite yet. We'll see.
I agree with that. Although I would say the Western Conference to me seems wide open. Like the East still to me is like that. Brooklyn is the best team, fully loaded. Clearly, I mean, setting aside that guy, I mean, think of freaking Patty Mills. Like, come on. Fully loaded Brooklyn team, I think, regardless of how they defend, it almost doesn't matter because, and I mean, we saw even in the Olympics, like KD, man, just looks so good. Oh my God.
Yeah. No, he's been fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the Nets have got to be the big favorites, but I mean, they just, you know, we got to actually see these guys together. Also, I'm very interested to see how the Harden and even more so Kyrie extension negotiations play out.
Definitely.
As well. Like those have not gotten done yet. I think Harden might not be eligible for like a little bit longer, maybe because of when he signed, I can't remember, but, although Harden has to get, if he's going to opt in and extend, it has to get done this offseason. Kyrie could potentially go into the season. It feels like they're all just going to re-sign, though. Like, that's just going to happen.
Yeah, there are some different dynamics with the two extensions because, you know, Harden makes more than Kyrie and with the max and the 8% and whatnot. Like, there are some subtle things with when they do it that could affect the money in the out years that might come into that, too.
Like, should I call the title of this podcast The Out Years?
it's really the story of free agency to me is that so many of these really good but older players got money or got extensions, and it's just when is the other shoe going to drop on these guys? You know, how do you feel about paying $55 million to Steph Curry in 2026? Right, like what is that going to look like? And
oh no, it's actually $59
million. Oh,
just so we get it right.
Oh my goodness. Okay. My bad.
But that said, I mean, that's one where, number one, like, he's still playing at, like, a top five player level. And number two, he's going to retire there as a franchise legend. Like, there's value in that in the way that I don't think there is for, like, Jimmy Butler with the Heat, for example.
Yeah.
But, all right, I think we could wrap it up here. This is a fun little yarn. Mm-hmm. And I will see you in the gym in about maybe 2 hours or so, my friend.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.